All right. Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday evening. I'm sure everyone heard the news that we own a retreat house, and we have bought furniture and linens for the beds, and things just seem to be moving pretty quickly now. On Tuesday of this week, Jacqueline and I, we're picking up some of the furniture because they charge a 6% delivery fee. So 6% of the total cost of the purchase of what they deliver is a fee. So we are, anything that we can carry, we're picking up and carrying. So Jacqueline and I are picking up that furniture that she and I are capable of carrying on Tuesday of this week, and taking it down to the retreat house. And then next Sunday, October, I got to turn my calendar, it's on September. Next Sunday, October 14th, the rest of the furniture will be delivered. And then on Tuesday, October 16th, Hal Seeley is coming, and he will be starting some handyman work. So he'll probably be staying there 2 or 3 weeks at the house, doing different tasks, different little jobs that need to be done. So it feels like things are kind of moving pretty quickly now, and it's kind of fun to watch. So we'll keep you all informed when we get the furniture in the house. We'll take more pictures, and we'll post those. You've seen it empty if you saw today's post. We'll post pictures once we get it put together so you can see that too. Lots of work to do. As I mentioned, we have to create web pages. It's almost like a little mini website. We have to plan the retreat schedule. Lots of work to do, but it's really fun work, and we're very happy to be doing it. In addition to that, as you guys know, we're getting ready to go on an Italy trip. And in fact, after this teaching, there will be a meeting for the Italy travelers. And one of the songs that some of the Italy travelers have been listening to in the last couple of days is a song called Pompeii. And because we're going to Pompeii, but also because this song to me is a symbol of no matter what is happening on the outside, if you close your eyes and pay attention to life awareness or existence awareness, you'll notice it hasn't changed. You know, whether you're sitting back on the beach on a beautiful day or whether you're in a town like Pompeii when Mount Vesuvius is erupting. If you really close your eyes and look, you'll notice that life awareness, existence awareness has not changed at all. And that's what this song symbolizes to me. So we will listen now to Pompeii by Bastille.
Close your eyes.
I love that song. And I noticed a few other people on Facebook saying the same thing. It's a great song. I just realized I forgot to turn on my camera. Let me do that, like getting in that habit now. Now that we're pre-Zoom. Oh, wait, it says it couldn't start my video. Well, then never mind. Sometimes Pal Talk won't start my video, so never mind. We'll just do the audio. We are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. It's part of the Guiding Lights. And I am on page 63, starting, it's really the first devotee question on the page, but it's about, you know, a little over halfway down the page. And this devotee is asking, on realizing samadhi, does one not obtain siddhis also? And siddhis means special powers. Oh, no mic? How about now? Have I got a mic now? You guys heard the song, right? Okay, good, good, good. Sorry for accidentally letting go of the mic. So let me just say again that I'm starting the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi on page 63. It's the first devotee question on the page, but it's about a little over halfway down the page. Hey, Ruby. Ruby, I'll probably be emailing you tomorrow. I think I have a slot for you on the schedule, so watch for that email, okay? All right. Or the day after tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to La Vida to talk to a contractor. So maybe it'll be the day after, but watch for it. Okay, so here's the devotee's question. On realizing samadhi, does one not obtain special powers also? And this is Ramana Maharshi's answer. In order to display special powers, there must be others to recognize them. That means there is no jnana, or enlightened one, in the one who displays them. Therefore, special powers are not worth a thought. Enlightenment alone is to be aimed at and gained. And that, you know, that's a little bitty paragraph, but it's a really big important point. Certainly in India, people think special powers are exciting. You know, you guys might remember, what was his name? He died not too long ago. Had kind of big hair. What was his name? He was an Indian guru. He used to, like, like manifest diamonds and stuff like that, jewelry right in his hand, and would give it to people. Can you guys think of his name? Lots of Westerners flocked to him as well. Sai Baba. Remember Sai Baba? Sai Baba. People get really excited by special powers, like people who can just manifest a diamond in their hand. Physical healings, of course, are very exciting to people. Raising the dead, super exciting. And I can certainly understand, you know, the interest in this stuff because it is kind of wow. I mean, wow. I mean, like, I don't know how to manifest diamonds, or if I do, I don't realize it. Nor can I raise the dead. So that stuff is pretty, pretty different. You know, it's not something that all of us know how to do. In fact, I would say that the people who do know how to do it are extremely rare. But what happens is people, when they're around special powers or when they're thinking about special powers, they get truth and illusion confused. Let me just start by talking about what illusion is, because I think even the word illusion, a lot of people do not have clarity on. So the definition of the word illusion is when something appears differently than it is. You know, that's an illusion. It appears differently than it actually is. And so if the entire world is one consciousness, it doesn't appear as one consciousness, right? It appears as the Tao says, as many things or as the 10,000 things, right? Really far more than 10,000. So that's an illusion. One thing in reality appearing as many things. That's an illusion. So when people have special powers, you know, like if you're manifesting diamonds, right? Or if you're healing the sick or raising the dead, that is still happening within the appearance of the many things. And when people get really excited about that and think, wow, that's very, very special, it's because their focus is still on the many things. If the eyes were seeing only consciousness, literally, only consciousness, then there could not be a special power. I mean, there couldn't be anything special there because all there is consciousness, right? There's not a man manifesting a diamond or a person healing another person who was sick a moment ago. You know, it's just all consciousness. So what Ramana Maharshi is saying in this answer is that, you know, whether you think you have special powers, and you think you can do things like manifest diamonds or heal the sick, or whether you're someone who thinks you observe someone else with special powers, you're still caught up in believing the illusion, believing the many things. You do not see the one reality. Right? You can't believe in special powers and see the one reality at the same time, because special powers are within the realm or the perception of the many things, which is the illusion. So listen to this answer again, and you'll hear that this is really what he's saying. In order to display special powers, there must be others to recognize them. You see, that's the many things, right? Others would be many things. In order to display special powers, there must be others to recognize them. That means there is no enlightenment in the one who displays them, because enlightenment would see only consciousness, see only one thing. Therefore, special powers are not worth a thought. Enlightenment alone is to be aimed at and gained. So when we get all excited about the special powers, when our focus is on the special powers, our focus is on the many things, which means our focus is on illusion or non-reality. And Ramana Maharshi says only reality is really worth your attention. That's a pretty simple, pretty clear answer to me. Now our next question, does my realization help others? The answer, yes. And it is the best help that you can possibly render to others. And it's funny because the first time I read this book, oh, I don't even remember what year it was. I think it was after I started hearing Inner Ramana. So it probably was 2009. I know it was not before I started hearing Inner Ramana, because I didn't know Ramana Maharshi when I started hearing him. I learned about him through that. So it was after. And so it was probably 2009 when I read this book for the first time. And so this answer, again, does my realization help others? And then this answer, yes, and it is the best help that you can possibly render to others. I have 3 stars by it, yay, and 2 exclamation points. You know, I was just so happy to hear that as I work on my own self-realization, I'm really providing the best service that I can provide to everyone else. That has always made my heart sing, seeing that as the truth. And so seeing it here in Ramana Maharshi's words, it just sang again, right? Yay! So again, does my realization help others? Yes. And it is the best help that you can possibly render to others. Those who have discovered great truths have done so in the still depths of the true self. But really, there are no others to be helped, for the realized being sees only the true self. Just as the goldsmith sees only the gold while valuing it in various jewels made of gold. When you identify yourself with the body, name and form are there. But when you transcend the body consciousness, the others also disappear. The realized one does not see the world as different from himself. So it's an interesting question because, you know, the question again was, does my realization help others? And of course, the answer that's provided when the question is in that form is yes. That's way better than no. Yes, it points more directly to truth. But as one becomes more and more realized, although the body's eyes, don't get me wrong, the body's eyes still see bodies of other people, you know, different faces and personalities and all of that. But there's a light within the mind that only sees itself. It only sees itself. You know, I talked a few weeks ago when we were talking about reincarnation. I used the example of a ball of dough, a big ball of dough, and that a personality, a body-mind personality, is kind of like if, without separating the noodle from the dough, if you kind of make a long, long noodle like a spaghetti noodle sticking out of the dough but still attached. Right, that's like a personality mind. And I talked about how, you know, if a body personality mind is born through the imprints that were left by a previous body personality mind, which remember was all consciousness, just a noodle off of the dough, right? Still dough. But then let's say there was a previous body mind personality that had a lot of fear throughout the entire lifetime, and when it died, there was still fear. That noodle goes back into the dough, but it leaves a little fear imprint on the dough. So if another body personality mind grows up out of that space, and again, this is all very figurative, it has that same imprint of that fear on it. And of course, if it believes the fear and maybe even, you know, adds guilt to it, you know, when it ends, there's even a bigger imprint on consciousness. But if what we do during our body, mind, personality experience is attempt to heal our fear, heal our guilt, heal all of our misperceptions, when this body ends, this personality ends, that noodle goes back into the dough, there is less of an imprint. And if we become fully enlightened, there's no imprint. But the imprint or the clear space is on the dough. The dough, again, is a symbol of consciousness. So by awakening ourselves, you know, it's really hard to put these things into word but by awakening ourselves, we're awakening consciousness. That's the way I'm going to say it. So So it's not really helping others, right? It's helping consciousness as a whole. But here at the level of form, it was appropriate that the question be answered the way it was. Let me read this question and answer again. So, does my realization help others? Yes, and it is the best help that you can possibly render to others. Those who have discovered great truths have done so in the still depths of the true self. But really, there are no others to be helped. For the realized being sees only the self. Just as the goldsmith sees only the gold while valuing it in various jewels made of gold. When you identify yourself with the body, name and form are there. But when you transcend the body consciousness, the others also disappear. The realized one does not see the world as different from himself. Right? Like I said, it's like a light in the mind that sees only the light. You know, it can't actually be described, of course. There aren't words that you can put on it. But it's a definite recognition. A definite recognition that occurs very, very naturally. And it's not seeing others, right? It's seeing that which is exactly the same as me, in no way different and in no way separate. The devotee asks, would it not be better if the saints mix with others? And Ramana Maharshi says, there are no others to mix with. The self is the only reality. It's kind of interesting, too, because people watch enlightened beings and people judge the behavior of enlightened beings as either right or wrong. You know, it either meets their expectation of what an enlightened being should be doing, the way that an enlightened being should be, or it does not meet their expectation about what an enlightened being should be doing or how an enlightened being should be. But what they don't understand when they're looking from the outside and judging the enlightened being is that the enlightened being is operating as if on automatic pilot. You know, the way they speak, the way they move, what they do, what they don't do. So whether they're involved with other people, whether they have a regular 9-to-5 kind of job, whether they're, you know, sitting in a cave as a hermit, and it's all just happening from the perspective of the enlightened being. There's no decision to be a certain way. You know, you don't decide how you're going to act with a certain person, for example. It's all just happening. It's all very, very natural. And the enlightened being is the awareness that sees it happening. There's no pre-planning of conversations. You know, I remember I used to always pre-plan conversations. I'm sure some of you guys are familiar with that. You know, you have a conversation with someone in your head. You imagine what you're going to say, and then you imagine what they're going to say, and then you imagine what you're going to say back. And depending on how much anxiety or excitement you might have about a particular conversation, you know, you could imagine it for days on end, and it could happen a number of different ways. None of that happens. None of that happens in the mind of an enlightened being. When they're in front of the person, they either speak or don't speak, and what they say, they say. What they don't say, they don't say. You know, it just happens. It's a part of the flow. So if we look at this question again, would it not be better if the saints mix with others? You know, Ramana Maharshi says, there are no others to mix with. The self is the only reality. But again, you know, whether what appears to be an enlightened being is mixing with others or not mixing with others, you could say genuinely is none of the enlightened being's business or concern. You know, my own life is no longer any of my business. I mean, if it was my business, if I say my life is my business, I get to decide what I want to do, where is that thought? Isn't that just the mind speaking? Isn't the mind saying, you know, it's my life, it's my business, I get to decide, I'm going to do it my way? Of course, even then, there's still no genuine control. Whatever happens is going to happen. But there's this illusion of control, this pretending to be in control when I think my life is my business. It's my life, after all. But there's no feeling about that for the enlightened being. There's no feeling that I own life. There's just being, and what happens, happens. And there's joy and happiness and freedom in that. And love. The next devotee asks, should I not try to help the suffering world? Ramana Maharshi says, the power that created you has created the world as well. If it can take care of you, it can similarly take care of the world also. If God has created the world, it is His business to look after it, not yours. One thing I've never understood are people who claim to be enlightened or awake and yet seem to have very strong soap boxes, you know, very strong opinions, some, you know, get very agitated, do lots of Facebook postings. Regarding politics. My experience is that I watch politics with a general interest. You know, there's a general interest about everybody's experience, right? And the common world experience touches a lot of people. You know, like just recently with this Kavanaugh thing. You know, a lot of people were touched by that emotionally. And so it's interesting to watch what's coming and going on the world scene. But there's a very strong awareness that it's coming and going. There's a very strong awareness that that it's not permanent. It has no real effects. And there's no personal opinion in me that it should go one way or another. Absolutely none. And I couldn't even make that happen. It's like whatever used to be in me that used to think things should go one way or another has died. And because it's not there anymore, I can't create that. You know, I can see what's going on. I can see how people feel about it. I can see where there's insanity about a particular topic and where everybody sees only their point of view and can't see the other point of view. And I can see all the little closed boxes. It's like everybody walking around with a closed box on their head. But I can't put my head in a box. I just can't. So when Ramana Maharshi is telling him, you know, God created the world, let God take care of it, You know, just like I said a moment ago, to the enlightened person, my life is not none of my business, right? My own life is none of my business. Well, then how in the world would the world be my business? If my own personal life is none of my business, how can the world be my business? When Ramana Maharshi says it's God's business, he's really referring to the flow, to interdependent co-arising, to the code, to a script, to karma. He's saying it will take care of itself. But the best thing that you can do is to stay out of it. And to stay out of it for the purposes of self-realization, because your own self-realization is the best service you can render to the world. And you can't really, genuinely, you can't, I'm sorry, be genuinely focused on your self-realization and caught up in the world too. You can't even genuinely be focused on self-realization and be caught up in your own life. You have to have a heart for one thing only, your self-realization. So, should I not try to help the suffering world? The power that created you has created the world as well. If it can take care of you, it can similarly take care of the world also. If God has created the world, it is his business to look after it, not yours. Imagine that. The world is none of your business. Even your own personal life is none of your business. The devotee says, is it not our duty to be patriots? Ramana Maharshi says, your duty is to be. And not be this or that. I am that I am sums up the whole truth. The method is summarized in be still. And there's more to this answer, but let me just pause with that. One thing that's extremely interesting to me, and it was when I read this book for the first time, is, as you all know, well, maybe you don't know, I actually received the mantra, I am that I am, around April or May of 2008. It came as a single quiet thought, which are now called the thoughts of awakening. And not too long ago, you guys looked at that. If you're in gentle healing, you looked at that thought of awakening where the I am that I am mantra was given. That happened around April or May of 2008. I'd never even heard of Ramana Maharshi then. Of course, I've heard of I am that I am, but I'd never heard of Ramana Maharshi. In February of 2009, the Inner Ramana started coming. And the Inner Ramana began to really emphasize that mantra that I had been given months earlier, right, and telling me exactly how to practice it. But when I first got this book and I started reading this book and I came to this part right here where he says, your duty is to be and not to be this or that. I am that I am sums up the whole truth. I mean, I think I almost cried. Because I knew that I had received something extremely genuine, the I am that I am mantra. And I became much more excited to practice the mantra. You know, became much more excited. I am that I am sums up the whole truth. I've had a number of people tell me, and it's okay, I don't mind. I don't want to act like I'm offended. But I've had a number of people tell me when they pick up Inner Ramana and they're reading Inner Ramana and they come to the assignment of the I am that I am mantra. They'll say, that mantra just doesn't excite me. I think I want to pick my own mantra. Like, okay, go ahead. But I think they're throwing away a gem. I think it's a mistake. I think that we're given the I am that I am mantra for a very specific reason. Sometimes people will say, they've defined I am that I am. And they'll say that, you know, it's supposed to have a comma in it. I am that. I am. You know, like I am that telephone. I am that microphone. I am. And, you know, there's a truth to that. If it's all consciousness, well, then I am that telephone. And I am that microphone. But that is still the mind taking over the I am that I am mantra. It's not really knowing what the mantra means at a level, a cellular level. That. Okay, I am that I am. That is an identifier. You know, like I might say, could you go get me the towel that's blue, right? By saying, the towel that's blue, I've identified which towel I want you to bring me. Do you remember the name of that song? You know, the song that we sing every Christmas. Right? The song that we sing every Christmas. I've identified which song I'm talking about. I am that I am. It's an identifier. It's not... I am a patriot. I am agnostic. I am a hard worker. I am bored with the world. It's I am that I am. Or the other way that he refers to that is just be. When you practice the I am that I am mantra, if you really understand it, you are reminding yourself to just be. Because that's what you are. Another way that Ramana often says that is abide as yourself. I am that I am. And then there's nothing after that. Right? If you've read the teachings of Inner Ramana, it tells you to rest in the silence that follows the mantra. I am that I am. And then just be. Right there in the silence. Listen to what he says here. Your duty is to be, and not to be this or that. I am that I am sums up the whole truth. The method is summarized in be still. Right? Just wait in the stillness. Just be in the stillness. He continues, and what does stillness mean? It means destroy yourself, because every name and form is the cause of trouble. Again, it's always interesting when Ramana Maharshi says, destroy yourself. But what he really means by destroy yourself is keep returning to that silence instead of to the chatter. And you don't destroy the chatter by attacking it. You know, if you were, you know, a big hitman working for people who like to get other people killed. And they say, go destroy Sam. I want Sam destroyed. You know, you take your little gun with your little silencer. You know, kind of like, what's that guy's name in Revolver? The assassin. I really loved him. What's his name? I can't remember his name. But you get your little silencer, you know, and you go and you stalk that person. You get the right opportunity. You aim at them and you pull the trigger and you destroy them, right? It was like an attacking and a stalking, and you have to pay a lot of attention to the one you're going to destroy. That's not true with destroy yourself. In fact, exactly the opposite is true. With destroy yourself, and again, in this case, it's really referring to the mental chatter, the mind, as we call it. With destroy yourself, what it means is every time you notice that your attention is caught up in it, pull your attention back. And right now, since we're talking about the mantra, pull your attention back into the I am that I am mantra, and then rest in the silence that follows. Was that his name, Shorter? Maybe that was the assassin there. I really loved him. He was a great character. Yeah, it might have been Shorter. Yeah. But it's the opposite of the stalking. It's the opposite of attacking, right? So even though the word destroy is used, it's not the same as what Shorter would do when he was assigned to go assassinate someone, right? So if you've read the teachings of Inner Ramana, you know that it kind of works this way. You know, maybe I'm doing dishes or something. I notice my mind's thinking about something that's not actually happening right now. Then what I would do is I would pause and I would say, I am that I am. Whew. Drop into the silence. Know the silence or the stillness. And then just return to doing the dishes. In that staying in that silence, staying in the being. And he refers to that as destroy, even though destroy sounds like a very kind of active negative term. He refers to that as destroy because in effect, when you do that, that chatter just stops. It just ends. It just dies. If you really do that with your heart. You know, I could be thinking, what am I going to wear to Italy? If I wear this, I'll look too fat. If I wear this, you know, I'll be uncomfortable. If I wear this, I might get hot. Blah, 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 blah. If I wear this, people will think this about me. Blah, 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 blah. Right? And then I recognize what's going on. I take a deep breath. I am that I am. And all that thought about Italy is gone, is in effect destroyed, right? It's gone. Of course, another thing that works just as well is self. Oh, no, you guys have just lost me. According to this, you have just lost me. In restarting Pal Talk. And it's not working. My internet has gone out. I will try starting my hotspot on my phone. Personal hotspot is on. There it is. All right, I'm on a personal hotspot, going back to Pal Talk. I am getting back in.
Ah, she's back. Future retreat house caretaker, Cheryl Kaplan. And now, Regina, I give you the mic back.
Yeah, thanks. My internet just went out here, so now I'm on my hotspot. But I'm back. And I remember what I was talking about was how the mental chatter is effectively destroyed through the I am that I am mantra and the willingness to stay in the silence. And that self-inquiry works just as well. You know, I could say, all the chatter going on about what I'll wear to Italy, what people will think about what I wear, whether I'll be as fashionable as other people. And then I noticed that's happening. I could say, like, what is thinking all of this? And, you know, the idea would come, the mind is thinking all of this. What sees all of this thinking? The answer might come, I do, or me. And then I ask, what am I? And I notice myself as the pure awareness that's aware of the chatter. And I turn my attention to that, and I notice how perfectly still it is, how present it is, how there's no chatter in it. It's not chattering. And I leave my attention with it. And again, the chatter is destroyed. Or another way to say it is that it disappears. It ceases. It ceases. That's probably the best way to say it. Because I'm no longer caught up in it. In order for it to continue, it requires my attention. When I take my attention away and I put my attention with truth, the chatter ceases. So Ramana Maharshi says, and what does stillness mean? It means destroy yourself, because every name and form is the cause of trouble. Then he says, I is the self. I am this is the ego. I've heard people also say they don't understand why Ramana Maharshi would call the self I. You know, like, isn't I the ego? Double I, wouldn't that be double ego? No. Imagine it this way. Imagine the first time you say I, that does point at the body-mind personality. And you have an immediate recognition that that's not what you are, that's the object, but that's not what you are. And so you say I one more time, and you go right past it to awareness existence. First I, body-mind personality. Second I, right past it to awareness existence. I is the self. I is the self. But then he says, I am this is the ego. Well, I am this is an idea. You know, whether I am a spiritual teacher, I am, you know, the mother, I am a very healthy person, I am ambitious and responsible. You know, any idea I put after I am defining myself as something distinct, as a thing that can be compared to and contrasted against other things. So I am this is the ego, he says. Just I, or I am that I am. That's the real self. That's the truth. I is the self. I am this is the ego. When the I is kept up as the I only, it is the self, right? Without the identification, without the definition. When it flies off at a tangent and says, I am this or that, I am such and such, it is the ego. The devotee asks, who then is God? Ramana Maharshi says, the self is God. I am is God. If God is apart from the self, he must be a selfless God, which is absurd. All that is required to realize the self is to be still. What can be easier than that? And then he's using a term I don't know. I have to look up in the back before I continue reading. Oh, knowledge of the self. It's Atma Vidya, but it means knowledge of the self. So he says, all that is required to realize the self is to be still. What can be easier than that? Hence, knowledge of the self is the easiest to attain, right? Because all you have to do is be still. Just be. And again, as we talked about earlier, that doesn't mean necessarily that you will just be sitting in a chair and never moving about. That is how it works out for some enlightened people, right? They just be on a chair or on a park bench. I mean, you know, Eckhart Tolle talks about after his awakening, how for 2 years he just sat on a park bench, right? That was it. That's how the universe moved him. It didn't. But then it began moving him differently. He began writing books. He became very famous. He became traveling all over, right? But to the true enlightened person, there is no difference between sitting on a park bench and keeping up a heavy travel schedule as one of the most famous non-dual teachers in the world. No difference. The being that is there is exactly the same. Remember, my life is none of my business. Whether it appears to be a busy life with lots of people or a very quiet, very still life alone, it's the same. I'm just being. Just being. It's none of my business what the body does. It's none of my business how the universe chooses to move it. I don't have preferences regarding what I do or don't do. And that's a very, very happy way to live. Preferences create unhappiness because guess what? You can't always have your preferences. I don't care who you are. You can't always have your preferences. So wanting things to go a certain way is going to create unhappiness. Just being with whatever is absolute joy. And that is the end of that particular section. What I need to do is save this recording before I can begin the travel meeting. So Ken, I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic back over to you early, and then I will come back at the top of the hour and begin the travel meeting. So, Ken, the mic is yours for 4 minutes.